not the case. Tree was very much his own person, intelligent and alert, harboring desires and aims, and she could see that he knew himself well, very well. "Tree, what's been done to you?" she asked, because she sensed that he wanted to talk. The feeling was nothing to do with the Force. It was merely the empathy of one sentient being for another.
"Just another slave spy used by the Jedi."
"You're altered," she said, realizing the startling truth. "Genetic?"
"Deep and permanent."
"No Jedi would do that," she said.
"Ha!"
Tree spat. A few people nearby glanced around at his outburst, and he stared them down, red and ferocious when he wanted to be. They went back to their drinks. "But it's..." Lannery said, but she did not finish her sentence.
Forbidden, she was going to say.
But she had that ongoing alchemy experiment on her ship, and she knew that some Jedi would frown on that. What was considered forbidden to some was exploration to others.
"I'm Dan Powell's toy,"
Trisana said, quieter now.
"There are promises made to me."
He sat up straighter, proud.
"And they'll be kept. Money, a new identity, and a state on a Skull Goran city ship."
He nodded firmly, but his leku writhed, displaying uncertainty and vulnerability. Lannery wasn't sure what to make of him, and the fact that he was closed to her gentle probings unsettled her. But she could also not help admiring Dan Powell's work. Whatever subtle genetic adaptations she had performed, whatever strange alchemies kept Tree's mind purely his own, but made him very obviously hers, were perhaps immoral, yet startlingly brilliant. "And you'll get all that," Lannery said. "Master Dan Powell is a Jedi of her word." Their food arrived. Tree started eating immediately, chewing and swallowing with barely a pause. He seemed ravenous. "The Gree," Lannery asked. "The blueprints. I need to know more."
"And now you're here, we can know more," Tree said, spitting half-chewed meat across the table.
Some of it landed on Lannery's plate. "When?"
"I need to find someone," he said. "Someone who's not easy to find, but on my own. A ranger will attract attention. You know the saying, when a ranger comes calling, trouble quickly follows. Well, so they hear of you with me, and they'll melt away, maybe for a long time. So leave it to me. Meet me here at dusk. I'll know where they are by then."
"Who is this person?"
"A rich Calamar. A dealer in swing dust and other air spices. And a stargazer."
"That word again," Lannery said. Tree wiped his mouth and took a drink.
"Not one that many know. Don't use it too freely."
He nodded down at Lannery's plate.
"You going to eat that?"
"No, help yourself." Tree pulled her plate across to him and started eating. It was as if every bite was his first.
"So, here, at dusk," Lannery said.
He nodded without looking up from the food. He exuded indifference, yet he had called himself a slave. A conflicted character, complex, troubled. Exactly who she would not want guiding her during her investigations. "Fine," she said. As she stood to leave, she saw faces turning away from her, and she walked to the doorway in a bubble of silence broken only by awed whispers of "Ranger" and "Jedi," and darker mutterings of "Trouble." She hoped the old saying Tree had reminded her of could be put to rest on Calamar. But hope alters nothing. And soon after leaving Susko's tavern, Lannery knew that she was being followed again.
"The first day is always the worst,"
the human, Master Turkay, says as he leads Lannery and Dale toward the surface.
"The silent desert can be an unsettling place."
"We know," Lannery thought. "We know for sure." They climb up through the vast cavern. "It's more like a city than a temple," Lannery thinks, and Turkay glances back at her.
"Listen when I'm talking or you'll learn nothing,"
he speaks in her mind. He's not angry, more amused, if anything. Her surprise at how easily he silently communicates is obviously evident in her expression.
Force telepathy is well known to her, but such control and command must have taken many years of meditation and study to master. Turkay laughs aloud, and Lannery smiles sidelong at Dale. He's frowning. He didn't hear a thing. She is still stunned at the size and scope of Qi Gong. She's heard all about it, of course, from her parents, and from those journeyers venturing through Bodhi Temple after having visited Qi Gong previously on their travels. Their talk is always of the temple first, its incredible size, the complexity of its caverns and tunnels, the strength of the force in this natural nexus. And then inevitably they will finish with stories of the silent desert. A haunting place, almost unnatural. She and Dale have already spent days crossing the desert to Qi Gong and encountering some of its dangers. But she senses that their real experience of those strange sands has only just begun.
"It's cool down here," Turkay says. "Sometimes the sands are hot enough to melt your shoes, and a slightest breeze will blister your skin. But that's usually later in the day. Down here, we're protected from the sun, and the climate is controlled by 6 conditioners. There's one over there."
They are crossing a wide cavern bounded on 3 sides with sheer walls, each of them speckled with ledges and stairwells, people bustling all about. Turkay points at the 4th side of the plaza, and there stands a huge machine, the height of 30 people, with curved protuberances that flex and bulge like something biological, not mechanical. It steams, groans, and moisture speckles its surface and pools around its base.
"That's a machine?"
Dale asks.
"Of sorts,"
Turkay sends. He glances at Lannery, raises an eyebrow, then speaks the words aloud. He expects Dale to be hearing all this, Lannery thinks. Her brother seems unaware, enwrapped as he is with the giant conditioner. "Of sorts?" Lannery asks.
"Many of its inner workings are grown at Anil Kesh."
"So it's alive?"
"Far from it."
Turkay turns and strides across the cavern floor, and they have to hurry to catch up.
"When we reach the surface, all will fall silent,"
Turkay says in Lannery's mind.
"But silence is subjective. You and I can communicate as we are now, and this is the first lesson. Force telepathy is a talent that some journeyers already have when they arrive here, but those who don't pick it up quite quickly."
He glances back over his shoulder at her, grim-faced.
"It's a fundamental talent,